Years ago, Danny Kaye made a movie, The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, and I always fantasized conducting a symphony orchestra, and one of the pieces I think would have to be The Planets. And Andre Previn is here, and you just heard him conduct Mars from Holst The Planets with the London Symphony Orchestra. First of all, may I say thank you for the glorious music-making in Symphony Hall last week.
We had
Rachmaninoff's Second Symphony and Anna-Sophie Mutter and the Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto, and exciting moments in the hall.
Thank you very much. It's I have to say, and I don't say it because it's geographically apt, but because it's true. First of all, to make music with this orchestra is easier than in most places because they're so wonderful. And then, of course, you have the best hall in America. That's not even an opinion, that's a fact, you know. And so to come here to make music is always a very great pleasure.
Watching you from my vantage point in the broadcast booth, I first of all noticed that you seem to be having a wonderful time. You seem to be in complete control of things and seem to be very pleased with what was happening on the stage. Is every performance different in Rachmaninoff's Second, for example, which has become somewhat of a signature piece for you?
Yes, I don't really know why it has, because I actually hadn't, until last week, I hadn't conducted it in a long time. But, I think every performance of every piece is different, you know. Anna-Sophie playing the Tchaikovsky, certainly the structure of the piece, the way she envisioned it, was the same. But details were different every night. Even the tempos were slightly different. I think if you fix something to the point of inevitability, you're going to lose a lot. That's the problem with records, that the fact that they're always, always going to be the same. I like the fact that at a live performance you're gambling with the unknown, and that things can go either very, very well or quite unexpectedly dreadful, and there's nothing you can do.
Is there a moment in the piece as it progresses where you say to yourself, "I hope this trend continues"?
No. You mean like
you just feel that this is it. This is going to be one of the definitive performances that you feel.
No, that's an extremely dangerous thought, because at that moment something will happen. No. Besides which, you don't really have time to think of anything except the moment at hand. That piece, which is very long, you know, the symphony is an hour long, and before I start, I there's a quote of Bruno Walters, who was one of my maybe two or three great, great heroes that I always remember. And he said, no matter how long a piece is, every piece has one climax only. He said, and you have to figure out as a conductor where that is and not do it before. Mm-hmm. And that's very, very good advice. And a piece like the Rachmaninoff, you can really, you can explode the whole thing 1 minute in. And then there's no place left to go.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I remember the first time I heard that work was on the old William Steinberg recording. I think it was on Command.
Oh, you got me.
Pittsburgh Symphony. Uh-huh. And I heard it, and I kept playing it, and I said, this is extraordinary. And I bore the record out, and then I had your copy, and then I heard what you did with the Boston Symphony, and I've never heard it complete like that, with all of the music included.
It used to be a piece that had so-called sanctioned cuts, but I found out that the cuts were sanctioned by Rachmaninoff, because in those days, I mean, really, really long ago, on 78 RPM records, there just was no way to play that long a piece. So he made cuts, but they were for the sake of having it recorded. And I was told that when I was visiting in Leningrad some years ago, and Ravinsky, the conductor of the Leningrad Symphony, said, you should do that piece uncut. And I opened it up, and he was absolutely right. It's gorgeous.
Uh-huh. Andre Previn is visiting with us, and he is delighted to say back conducting the Boston Symphony in a series of concerts this week. You're doing Haydn, the Bear Symphony, the Haydn Cello Concerto, number one, with Wendy Warner.
Mm-hmm.
And the Prague, the Mozart Prague Symphony.
Yes, it's the absolute other side of the coin. Very small orchestra, very over-refined, cultured music. I should explain about Wendy Warner. Wendy Warner is quite something, because she hasn't been here before. I heard Wendy play when she gave a student recital at Curtis in Philadelphia about 3 years ago, at which point she was, I think, either 16 or 17. And she's a Rostropovich student, and he's very proud of her, and she absolutely bowled me over. And she's still a kid, you know, I mean, I guess she's 19 or 20, don't hold me to that. And I liked her so much that I hired her for the London Symphony Orchestra and at Philadelphia and here in Boston. And so she's, I hope she's obviously going to have a big career. And Mr. Ozawa was very kind because when I asked about that, he said, is that Slava's Pride and Joy? And I said, yes. He said, fine, by all means. And she's quite something.
I will look forward to hearing her. And we're going to play another one. By the way, we were looking at some of the recordings that we have in the library, and it encompasses about 3 pages of things that you have done, either as a conductor or, in many cases, with your jazz trio, the New Things with Telarc, with Ray Brown.
Mondo well, Rock. I now have a brand new one of that persuasion on Angel. I went back to them.
Mm-hmm.
But there aren't that many of those still around, except the new ones, the 3 on Telarc and the brand new one. But there's an awful lot of conducting ones and quite a few of chamber music recently.
William Walton is, I know, one of your favorites
mm-hmm.
as a composer. And what draws you so much to Walton's music?
Oh, I don't know. It's not played as much now as it used to be. But when I first went to take over the London Symphony Orchestra, which was in 1967 or 68, I stayed there for 11 years, and I was able to indulge my passion for British music. And Walton's music is always rhythmically very interesting, and it's very romantic, and he can orchestrate everybody else out of house and home. It always sounds so wonderful. And I got to meet him, and he went on some tours with us, and we became good friends. And I did a couple of premieres of his later works. I just think he's terrific.
Well, we're going to hear you conduct the London Symphony in a performance of William Walton's Scapino Overture. It's our guest, Andre Previn, conducting the London Symphony Orchestra and the overture to Scapino by Sir William Walton.
Mm.
Is that an opera?
No, Scapino is a commedia dell'arte character.
Dell'arte.
And that was an overture that was commissioned by Frederick Stock when he had the Chicago Symphony.
Mm-hmm.
And they've played the premiere. Mm-hmm. I know nothing else about it.
Wonderful. It's
yeah,
it's nice here piece. With Belshazzar's Feast. Fills up the rest of the CD.
Yes. You know, I could never get used to that. In the old days, when you made a big symphony, that was it for the record. And now, I don't care what it is. You know, you make Mahler 4, you make the Fantastique, you make whatever, and they say, and what else? On the same record. Because if it doesn't have 75 minutes of music on it, everybody gets mad.
Uh-huh.
So now, I mean, in the old days, Belshazzar's Feast, that was it. And now I see by that there's Scapino and Portsmouth Point and the Britten Variations are all on there. So it's a nice full record.
The many worlds of Andre Previn have always fascinated us because you are at home doing just about everything in the world of music. You were just a kid when you came to Hollywood.
I was in high school, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, it's a long time ago. I had a good time. it's a whole different world. I mean, I haven't set foot in a film studio in 30 years, and nor do I have any longing for it or any. I have very nice memories of it, you know, which I even wrote about at one point in a short book last year, but it's nothing that I would want to do again.
Mm-hmm. When you see those MGM movies, it is amazing how well they hold up through the years.
Technically, they were so remarkable.
Yeah.
If you see some of those musicals that I remember working on, and we never thought about it much one way or the other, it was just a job. And now, there are long PhD dissertations on Esther Williams. I don't know how they get that. But still, if you see those movies, they are technically absolutely perfect. You know, everything that has nothing to do with the actual meaning of a movie, but the nuts and bolts of it. I mean, the sound and the music and the arrangements and the sets and the camera work are so smooth and so beautiful that it's fun to look at, even if it's only for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you had some incredible studio musicians to work with, didn't you?
Oh, incredible.
Yeah.
Those were people from the very greatest symphony orchestras in the world and from the greatest dance bands in the world, and they just opted for a slightly easier life. And they came out there and sat around in a lot of soft shirts and played, but it was wonderful.
At that time, I imagine you were playing a lot of jazz, too.
Yeah.
And in clubs around?
Yes, yeah.
L.A. and...
Well, no, not around L.A. Even then, I tried to get out of L.A. But I played some clubs, and those were the days when there were a lot of college jazz tours. You know, that aspect of the jazz audience is, I think, gone now. But there used to be big packages like Shearing and Brubeck, and I would go along, and, you know, it was fun to do.
It was very seductive as a kid growing up on the East Coast, where you were on the other side, the other ocean. Listening to that music when I would collect those Pacific jazz records and hear Shelley and Clifford Brown and Bud Shank and Chet Baker and Mulligan.
Great people.
The sound was so different at that time.
Yeah,
when
it was very laid back, and it was very beautiful, and it tended to have a little more toward the arranged sound than they did on the East Coast. I mean, the East Coast was really... a lot of those records from that era were straightforward jam sessions. And in the West Coast, somebody always worked out the opening and closings anyway. And it was a much more organized sound, but it was beautiful. Those were great players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess another thing that was attractive to me about it was the fact that you were all making this music in this gorgeous weather. You know, it would have these gray... February marches here, and I'd put on my Mulligan, Chet Baker things and say, wow, I'd like to be here. I'd like to be a part of that scene.
It made you think of orange juice right away.
Yeah, right.
I see.
Right.
Okay.
I was thinking of turning into an orange. I'm going to get back and play in that we are approaching Thanksgiving, and then we head right into the whole holiday thing. But I thought a little taste of the Nutcracker. This will be the first time that I've had a chance to play it. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that... the complete Tchaikovsky that you have done has been reissued on
series in England, anyway. Yes, they put out one of those huge, probably unsaleable boxes with many, many CDs in it of the complete Tchaikovsky. I don't know who would buy it, but certainly the big ballets, the Nutcracker complete and Swan Lake complete and Sleeping Beauty complete and all those are in there. So, but I'm not plugging that record. I am baffled by the fact that they would even put it out. But there we are. And you've got a single record. It must be highlights from the Nutcracker.
It's called Tchaikovsky, the Dance Album. And they're calling CDs albums now. They still call them albums.
I've never... And they put on excerpts from other people?
Excerpts. Sir John Barbaroli is a mate of yours here, and Sir Thomas Beecham, Riccardo Muti, and Andre Previn.
Well, that's very nice. It's a good vocal group.
With the Berlin Philharmonic this time, and the excerpt from the Nutcracker, which is always a good time to play it just before we get into Thanksgiving. Then we hear it a lot.
It's a very evocative piece. It really sounds great.
Mm-hmm. You were mentioning that the composer who...
Benjamin Britten. I found that so amazing. I was very fortunate in knowing Britten very well, and... when he was ill toward the end of his life, and he had trouble concentrating on books, and I asked, I called him up down in Aldborough, and I wanted to know whether that maybe should I send him some records. And he said, that's very kind of you. And I said, what would you like to hear? And he said, I want to hear the Tchaikovsky ballets. Well, I thought he was kidding, because you don't really think of Benjamin Britten sitting around listening to the Nutcracker. But he thought it was an immortal masterpiece. And I presume he didn't really want to lie there not feeling well and listening to the Missa Solemnis, you know. So he opted for the Tchaikovsky ballets, and I sent them with a certain amount of misgivings, and then Peter Peers, you know, was his great friend, mm-hmm. said that Ben spent many hours listening to it. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. And it was a favorite of Arthur Fiedler. He used to conduct it at the annual Boston Ballet production mm-hmm. here in Boston, which is a big event with the children and all, and Fiedler used to conduct that every year. Just about all those performances.
That's a wonderful piece.
Yeah.
It was not a success when it was first written.
Mm-hmm.
But it certainly is now.
How do you relax when you get away from music? What do you do?
We live out in the country, and so there's always a lot to do outside. I'm happy with our gardens, and And don't forget, I have a lot of kids. My youngest is 10 years old. And he takes up whatever spare time I might have, you know, because if he wants to go and play tennis or baseball or whatever, then that's fine. That's what I want to do. And I read a great deal. But, you know, I guess really you could ask any one of my colleagues the same thing and you'd get more or less the same answer, and that is that we're all inundated with music, and even when we're not actually playing it, we're listening to it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of that.
I was reading once about Aaron Copland. Apparently was in a supermarket once and they were playing one of his pieces. It was coming over the speaker in the supermarket, and someone said, "Mr. Copeland, isn't it nice that we can hear your music?" And he said, "Not really. I have to be in the mood for that."
Oh, that's nice.
You know?
That was a nice, tactful way to put it.
Yeah. But we are literally surrounded by music everywhere.
Yes, it's a little too much, if you really, yeah. I mean, if you want my opinion. The fact that you have music playing in elevators and in waiting rooms and things, it's as if everybody was afraid of silence. And I think that occasional silence helps make the music more wonderful, whereas if it just kind of keeps driveling on and on and on, you get to the point where you just wish it would stop for a second.
Mm-hmm. But I must say, I have something called symphony withdrawal. You know, if I'm away too long,
yeah,
I just have to come back in with the Sibelius second or the Rachmaninoff, something like that.
Oh, sure.
You know.
Yeah.
And what a joy it is to come back in after you've been away from it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Andre Previn spending some time here with us, and we are delighted that he could come by, and we are looking forward to his second week with us here in Boston. Wednesday night, you're conducting. And Friday afternoon, which will be broadcast as always here on GBH Radio, and again Saturday night. And you mentioned the young cellist. We look forward to hearing her. Wendy Warner is going to be doing the Haydn Cello Concerto. And you're going to do the Prague Symphony.
Yes, and Haydn Symphony number 82, which is called the Bear.
The Bear Symphony. Have you ever conducted the Boston Pops?
Never.
All right.
No.
Mm-hmm.
No, I once, when it was some kind of anniversary. The Boston Pops seems to have a lot of anniversaries. They're always celebrating something. And there was some kind of celebratory television show, and I went, I came and played the Gershwin Piano Concerto with Johnny conducting. Johnny and I are friends from adolescence back. I mean, we were rehearsal pianists together and things, and I've known him all my life. And so that was a pleasure to do, but I came as a pianist. I've never conducted them, no.
Mm-hmm. I was going to play something by Benjamin Britten.
Yes.
Because we were talking about Britten, and I thought we'd play the one of my favorite sections of the Sea Interludes.
Oh, from Peter Grimes.
From Peter Grimes, mm-hmm. And here you're back with the London Symphony Orchestra.
All right.
On a CD that also includes the Spring Symphony.
Well, that's a great piece. That's a really great piece of his. That's one of his best pieces, but that's very long and very prolix and has a lot of, you know, it's got chorus and children's chorus and soloists and a huge orchestra and all kinds of things, almost like the War Requiem in terms of the forces it uses. The Peter Grimes interludes I did in Berlin many, many years ago, and they have a wonderful snobism about British music, which they don't really think exists. And the next morning, one of the reviews said that I did the four Sea Interludes from the movie Peter Grimes. I thought it was a not very subtle way of putting it down.
That was one of the interludes from Peter Grimes that we played. Our guest, Andre Previn, conducting the London Symphony. We were talking about the fact that music is all-encompassing these days. And just as another point to that, our car radio is being repaired. A cassette got jammed in there, and I find myself reaching for for the radio in the car.
Oh,
the
yes.
Past couple of
I have to admit that I do that automatically. But I must say I don't trust the stations too often, at least not up where we live. And I make sure that I have my own CDs in the car to listen to, because sometimes if you get attacked by country and western and things, and then what? You know, then you plow into a truck. So it's better to have your own music.
I don't know what kind of schedule you have, and I feel like I'm infringing here, but I wanted to...
No, but don't you break for the news?
We're going to do news, but I wanted to play some of the trio things, if you don't mind.
Well, that's very nice of you.
And can you stay around and chat a bit longer?
Yeah.
All right. Let's... Andre Previn, our guest, will pause for news headlines, and then he will be back as long as we can keep him here for a few minutes more. Topsy, and Andre Previn and the trio. Mondell Lowe and Ray Brown.
I wasn't expecting to hear that side of my efforts today, but there we are.
We enjoy it, and that was recorded in a San Diego concert. And
yeah, that's right. That's right.
Uh-huh. The recordings, I remember that when I first discovered the jazz side of Andre Previn was at the My Fair Lady, which became a bestseller that you made back in the 60s.
Oh, earlier than that.
Was earlier than that?
I really hate to tell you.
Late 50s, maybe?
Yeah, that show came out in, I think, 56, something like that. Mm-hmm. And we made that album before all the songs were a big hit. In fact, we assembled that night in the warehouse that Contemporary Records, which was a small jazz label in those days, recorded in. And somebody, Shelley, said, why don't we make the score to Fair Lady? It's such a big hit. And I said, who knows about what... The only tunes that we knew were Street Where You Live and I've Grown Accustomed to Her Face. So we had to send somebody to an all-night record shop and buy the cast album, and they came back to this little warehouse, and we would play one tune at a time and figure out what it was about and then change it all around if we wanted to and then record it. So it took all night, but we started, you know, after dinner, and by breakfast we were finished with the whole album. And I thought it was the most elaborate private album ever, because I never thought anybody would be interested in the meanderings around of that kind of show music, because it was the first time anybody had made a whole score of Broadway. And then it surprised us, and it was a big hit.
Yes, got a lot of it. In those days, the commercial stations were playing those kind of things.
Well, it sold a million copies in those days, which was a big deal. Yeah. It isn't anymore. The pop kids, they put out a record, you know, at 9 in the morning, and by 10 it sold a million records. Mm-hmm. It's different now. But in those days, it was still quite something.
I was going to ask you about the younger generation in terms of the music of this now era generation, our generation, in terms of the jazz thing.
You know, I'm not very up on it. Right. I have to tell you that I try to keep up with the young serious composers and performers. But as far as jazz is concerned, I've always found that it's an enthusiasm of one's youth, insofar as you keep the same heroes for a lifetime. So the people that I loved when I was first listening to, which is Shelley and Dizzy and Bird and all like that, I've never really got much beyond that. Mm-hmm. So I don't know the brand new kids very well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you still obviously enjoy playing it.
Oh, yes,
and, I love it. It comes through in these recent recordings you're making.
Good, and thank you.
So... Well, thank you again for the pleasure of your company, Mr. Previn. It's been a delight to have you here.
Well, it's very kind of you. Anytime, and it's nice to be here. It's such a nice city, and the orchestra is so phenomenal. I really am having a very good time.
Great. We look forward to hearing you again this week.
Good.
Wednesday night, for folks who would like to get to Symphony Hall and hear our guest, Andre Previn, conduct Haydn and Mozart with the young Wendy Warner. That we've discussed on the cellist, and the Bear Symphony of Haydn, and the Prague Symphony of Mozart. And then again, Friday afternoon, we will have the broadcast here on GBH Radio, and again, Saturday night. And the Symphony Hall box office is there, 266-1492. I'd like to thank our good friend Bernadette Horgan of the press office for bringing Andre Previn by today. Thank you so much, and hope you visit us more often.
Whenever I'm here, thank you very much.
Like to have you here.
Thank you.